friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, famous. You and I tuned into the Tim and Friends show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Hello, it's me, Timothy, and this is Tim McAlifan, Friends of the Show, a.k.a. Tim and Friends, for this May 3rd, 2021. I am the aforementioned Tim McAlif, and I will be your server today. Today, we're serving up whole grain goodness in the form of Chris Johnston ahead of a busy night in the National Hockey League, 14 games, including 3 in our home and native land. We've also got Kenny the Jet Smith after an Eastern Conference preview, a rare Raptors win on the road, and LeBron lamenting his team's lot. Former Jay Ricky Romero will drop in after an impressive Jays sweep of the Braves and a couple more trips to the IL, man. The Jays' injuries are more ridiculous than naming a NASCAR event the Bushy McBush Race 400 and then have Kyle Busch win that race. That actually happened. It's not an SNL skit. The Bushy McBush Race 400 won by Kyle Busch. Did you just say fix, Jesse? That's pretty good. Only in NASCAR, no? I don't want a stereotype, but only in NASCAR.
Of course.
All right. And after joining us within the hour, fresh off of his win on the Champions Tour, first win since 2007, proud owner of one of those green jacket thingies, Mike Weir stops by to chat live on the show. Suffice to say, as I mentioned, this will be a jam-packed Monday edition as we take you to Hockey Central on Sportsnet Ontario. Full 2 hours are available everywhere else and available 24/7. On Sportsnet now. Speaking of jam-packed, 14 in the NHL tonight. 3 of them in the North, including a potential first-round matchup. Leafs, Habs, that is, unless Montreal now catches Winnipeg. Habs got a big win Saturday night, capped by Cole Caulfield's OT winner and first NHL goal. Puts them 2 points back of the Jets, who try to snap their 6-game losing streak in Ottawa tonight. Full previews coming up, including a look at the Oilers and the Canucks as Connor McDavid continues his march towards the century mark. 100 points. I mean, let me put that in perspective for a split second here. Taylor Hall won the Hart 3 years ago with 93 points in 76 games. McJesus has 87 points in 49 games. 87 and 49. And oh yeah, speaking of 82 game paces, Austin Matthews is on a 66 goal pace over 82 games. I know, it's been the same 6 teams, but man, take a step back. This has been special. I hope you haven't been too distracted by terrible governance to enjoy what we have seen in the North. It's been a lot of fun. Great offensive skill on display almost every day. Take it in, kids. 3 of them tonight in the North. All right, the Raptors got maybe the most confounding win of their ridiculously confounding season. Last night, the Raptors went into Staples Center in L.A. 2-12 in the second half of back-to-backs. They were on the road after a tough loss to a really good Utah team. And all they did was put up 72 first-half points against the best defensive team in the NBA. One with more skilled size than almost everyone in the league. I mean, this one had me more confused than this woman after a night out. Don't worry, she's okay, I think. Couple points here. Pascal had a really good game against a really good defense and great bigs. I mean, 39-13. Do we know what Pascal Siakam is yet? Kyle Lowry took it personal, which is always fun to watch. He had 37 and 11 dimes, prompting this from our big homie Kendrick Perkins. It's a tweet. It was on the internet. It was labeled LeBron looking at Rob Pelinka after dropping a 37-piece dinner spicy and handing out 11 biscuits with the W in Staples tonight. And he included the LeBron looking at J.R. Smith gif. We'll get into the LeBron whining about the play-in tournament, the Giannis versus KD matchup from last night, and what in the good name of Ala Abdelnaby the Raptors are doing with this season. Coming up with Kenny Smith. But in the immortal words of Biggie Smalls, first things first, kids.
First things first.
Two steps forward, one step back for the Blue Jays this weekend. They got their first series sweep of the season over the Braves, and we got a slight glimpse of what this lineup could look like at its full potential. But the injuries continue to pile up as they get set to begin a tough 10-game road trip. Friday night, George Springer, Teoscar Hernandez in the lineup together for the first time, and the Jays looked awesome. They put up 13 runs, six big flies, including one from the returning Teoscar Hernandez and two from Alejandro Kirk in the nine hole. And then on Saturday, Springer, my God, hit his first two home runs as a Blue Jay, including a 470-foot bomb.
Swing and a drive. He's done it again. Springer on a 3-0 pitch. It was 9 miles, and we are tied.
It was the fourth longest home run by a Blue Jay in the StatCast era. The Jays walked it off in extras Saturday night. Jays fans were giddy with excitement. They seemed more jacked than that girl who touched a Chiro.
Zetro will go over to the barrier, lean in, and just come up a little bit shy.
Young fan down there, very excited. She almost came away with the baseball.
Ichiro was almost in her lap.
Ichiro touched her with his glove, and she is freaking out. This is hysterical.
That excited. However, Saturday's win came with a but, and this is a big but. I mean, like, Sir Mix-a-Lot but. After his big Friday night, Kirk was injured during his first at-bat on Saturday, and Springer appeared to tweak his quad injury running to first base before his two big flies. So even as they completed the sweep on Sunday, the Jays and their fans were conflicted in their enjoyment. Kirk landed on the DL, and Springer went 0-for-3 before being lifted in the seventh inning of a 4-2 game. Charlie Montoyo explained the decision to pull Springer after the game, saying this.
No, he was fatigued because, of course, it was hot today, and then 3 days in a row and swinging the bats and stuff, he felt fatigued. And, of course, you know, we're going to be careful with him, and that's why we decided to take him out. It was the best team for him today.
Right. Fatigue. It's clear the leg was bothering him on Sunday. He's yet to play center field. Like, you can tell us. We've got our big kids' pants on, all right? We understand what we're all talking about. If the guy was completely healthy, he would be playing center field. The $150 million man is still not right. We're okay with it. I mean, he was right enough to hit a pair of bombs, including a moonshot, so I'm not sure what it all means, other than you probably want him around when it matters most. So herein lies the juxtaposition, the contrast for all Jays fans. Springer sideline while Kirk, Tommy Malone, and Anthony Castro all hit the injured list on Sunday. The Jays currently have 8 players on the IL. They have had 18 different players on the IL this season. They've already lost 280 man games to injury. They've used 23 different lineups through 26 games. 15 batters have made a plate appearance, and 20 pitchers have thrown an inning. And their starting rotation has been held together with Big League Chew. And just like Big League Chew, somehow they've still managed to be good. They're 2 games above 500, 1.5 back of the Red Sox for first in the division. And listen, I'm telling Charlie we don't need to hear fatigued, but he deserves a ton of credit for keeping the Jays in it. And so do Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins. Remember when we used to make fun of them for organizational depth? Like it was some sort of catchphrase for not getting the guy that you wanted. Well, kids, that organizational depth certainly has been coming into play. Credit where credit is due. Now comes the tough part. Some of the Jays' flaws may have been masked by a lighter than usual schedule over the last couple weeks. Now they begin a 10-game road trip over 11 days and part of a stretch that will see them play 29 games in 31 days. That organizational depth is about to be tested. Now the rotation got a boost with the return of Ross Stripling Sunday, and the Jays are hopeful that Hyunjin Ryu will be back Thursday. So, if all things go to plan, the rotation could be in decent shape by the end of the week, but that's a big if. Springer remains the biggest question mark. With his return to Houston looming on Friday, we'll see if he's back in the lineup tonight, but it's hard to imagine him playing center field anytime soon. Despite it all, the Jays have scored 37 runs in their last five games. They have the second best team ERA in the American League. Listen, I know it's been a bit of a roller coaster. This first things first and the season. But I think the moral of the story and the last 3 days is if this current iteration of the Jays can just get healthy, we may have just seen a glimpse of what they could be this season and the next couple years. If so, the possibilities are apparently almost as exciting as touching a Chiro.
Ichiro was almost in her lap.
Ichiro touched her with his glove, and she is freaking out. This is hysterical.
First things first.
Same thing happened to me when I touched Ichiro.
I would have that same reaction. How could you not? Ichiro. Come on, man. It's a legend.
I should say Ichiro, right?
I actually was going to compliment. Ichiro. I was going to compliment you on it. I thought it was
Ichiro?
Rolled off the tongue really nicely, I thought.
But I think it's like Ichiban, Ichiro.
Right. Yeah.
So I should probably pronounce it properly.
Whatever.
All right. What's the point of the first things first? What did you take from this weekend?
I think Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro are really having a moment right now. I think they have shown and exhibited now why they spend so much time building up the organizational depth. If you're just running Joe Blow out there as subs for guys that are injured, you are not going to be 14-12 and a game and a half back of the division lead. And now you're setting yourself up for when you eventually do get healthy, and hopefully it's soon. You've seen over the weekend what this team is capable of when they're fully healthy, and it's going to be all systems go.
This is the epitome of short sample size, but I think it's okay to get excited. I think when you saw that lineup stretched out as it was and Semien playing where Semien ended up in that lineup, you're thinking to yourself, man, I know that a lot of these pieces are hooked up long term. And that's why I think it's okay for Jays fans to start getting excited. Like, we talked about that bandwagon rolling. Mm-hmm. And had it not been for Springer and the end of the week with a couple more trips to the IL, I think the bandwagon would have been the hottest it's been since they got, you know, a couple runs into the postseason. Like, I think that's where you were at with a sweep. And let's be honest here, for Shapiro and Atkins will never admit to it. But sweeping Alex Anthopoulos and the Atlanta Braves had to feel good. Like, they'll never, ever say it, but it had to feel good.
Can we discuss for a second how George Springer obviously was not 100% and hit a 470-foot home run when he clearly was still having issues with the quad?
He was just fatigued, Jesse. I don't know what you're talking about. He was just fatigued.
That leads me to my next question. Right. So we've all played sports growing up. Like, I hurt my hammy. I'm not going to pretend to be a professional athlete, but when you hurt, you have a soft tissue injury like a hamstring or a quad or something. Yeah. The next time you play, or the next couple times you play, I think it's in your head a little bit that, you know, you don't know if you're going to tweak something or injure something. And I just wonder, I know Arden Zwelling in his piece had mentioned that Springer said it's a little bit mental. And I wonder how big of a part the mental side of this is playing with Springer, because, yeah, he took a weird step out of the box. But at some point, you got to just trust it. You got to trust that you're going to be okay. And it's hard to speculate because, again, it's a soft tissue
issue. He's been limping all over the field. Like,
he did not look good in that.
There were a couple of different times where he's grabbing at it. There was the first strikeout in yesterday's game after he left the box. You saw a little bad boy strut in it. Like, you knew there just a little bit of a and to me, that's just he's not 100%, mm-hmm. but he knows what he wants to do. And he's good enough to hit, so he says, "Put me in, coach."
It was like the day before came back.
But there's no way he's 100% if he's not playing center field.
100%, and not only that, when he came back the day before, he wasn't 100%. It's not like you're magically going to be cured overnight,
right?
So that told us everything we needed to know. And I think it is a little bit concerning that he's played four games now and we haven't seen him in center field. And it doesn't look like there's any timeline for when he's going to be playing in center field.
I don't know if you remember last week, there was a guy that kept saying there's little alarm bells trickling in the back of his head about not playing center field and talking about DHing.
Don't separate your shoulder over there.
Patting myself on the back. I am going to separate. But listen, I would say, and listen, we don't even know if he's in the lineup today. It's a later start today. We'll find out. Dobbs, when's producer Thomas Dobby, when's Charlie Montoyo speaking today? Is it closer to 7 p.m. Eastern time? So we might hear by the end of the show whether or not Springer is in the lineup, and we'll bring it to you as soon as we
know
it.
That would be good news.
But they also have, if Hyunjin Ryu gets back, they also have their rotation kind of sort of lined up for this week. And Oakland's cooled off a little bit. Like, there's opportunity again for this team to keep on winning. And we said with Dan Shulman last week, if they just hang around 500 while they have all these injuries, look the bleep out.
Yeah, it doesn't look like anybody in this division is ready yet to run away with it. So they're buying themselves some time with a sweep of the Braves when you're not even 100% healthy.
Is this proof that nobody knows nothing in Major League Baseball? You know, I said the Jays lead the American League in ERA, are second in the American League in ERA. Do you know who leads the American League in ERA? The New York Yankees.
Yeah.
What was their weakness going into this year?
Pitcher.
What was the Jays' weakness going into this year?
Pitcher.
Like, it's amazing. So I don't know if I think the Yankees are starting to round into a little bit of form here. And it might not be that the Jays, even when healthy, can beat this Yankees team. However, it's going to be fun to watch, and a lot of the pieces are locked in here, kids. So you might as well get locked into the Jays. Later start tonight, just after 9:30 Eastern time, as they are in Oakland for the lid lifter of a four-game series. Still to come, Chris Johnson in studio ahead of the Leafs-Habs tonight. Plus, we'll talk Connor McDavid and Mike Smith. I got an opinion on Mike Smith, kids. And speaking of Smiths, Kenny, the Jet Smith, will pop by to talk about LeBron's play-in game comments or play-in tournament comments and an impressive Raptors win. Also impressive win from Mike Weir on the Champions Tour. His first in 13 years. He's going to join us this hour. But up next, we keep the Jays talk going with former Blue Jay Ricky Romero. It's Tim and Friends on a Monday.
Mike Weir, the 2003 Masters champion, wins for the first time on the PGA Tour Champions.
What does this do for Mike Weir?
It means a lot. It means a ton. You know, I played really, really well today.
Can you believe you almost didn't have your golf clubs?
I heard about that. Oh, my God.
Here's a steal here. Matthews scores! Austin Matthews!
He's just amazing. like, it's crazy.
Here's Petrie to Caulfield, scores! Cole Caulfield!
It was a big goal for us, and it was one of the best in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on.
Deep to center, and this one's gonna go. Kirk's first multi-home run game of his young career. Welcome back, Tail. That's six homers for the Blue Jays tonight. The Blue Jays win it. It was all about the offense. As a deep drive to right, George Springer, his first home run as a Blue Jay. Swing and a drive. He's done it again. This was 9 miles. There's a base hit, and the Blue Jays are going to win it. Randall Grichuk singles into center, and the Blue Jays walk off the Braves. Breaking ball. It's going to be a fair ball. Marcus Simeon with a two RBI double. Marcus Simeon, a two-run home run.
6. And the Blue Jays indeed sweep the three-game series over Atlanta.
Jays bats were booming over the weekend with George Springer and Teoscar Hernandez. And despite concerns over Springer's health, things are looking up for the Jays. Second in the AL East, they start a tough 10-game road trip through Oakland, Houston, and Atlanta tonight. Gets going. Blue Jays Central, 9 Eastern. First pitch at around 9:40 Eastern, 6:40 Pacific in Oaktown. For more on the Jays and the roller coaster season so far, let's bring in a man who is not only contributing to Blue Jays Central from his home in California, he is a former Major League Baseball All-Star, and if I'm not mistaken, one of the few dudes to have played for both schools in the famed East LA Classic between Garfield and Roosevelt High Schools. Ricky Romero, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tim. Good to see you.
Am I anywhere close on the East LA Classic?
No, yeah, you're super close. Yeah, it's big-time rivalry here in Southern California, or actually in East L.A. So when I made that switch, it was big news, and I was hated for a while.
It's funny because, so listen, I love high school sports, and I think that the privatization of sports is a grave injustice if we lose high school sports, because people from all demographics, all socioeconomics can play at the high school level. And we make, you know, all these things, $40,000 to play every year, we're going to lose a bunch of people. But I was reading, because I love high school sports, that the East LA Classic football homecoming draws 20,000 people for a football game. Is that true?
Yeah, it's crazy around here when those two schools get together. And it's not like you're watching these guys move on to big time Division I schools or anything like that, but it's bragging rights for a whole year. The whole pep rally thing, it's a whole week of literally just prepping for this game, for this big game. And when I was in school, I remember that some of the games would end in like 7-6 or something. So there wasn't very many, much offense, but they were always fun to be a part of. And it brought the community together. East LA is a small little community, so yeah, it just brought everyone together. So it was really fun.
Was baseball just as good?
It started to towards the end of my career there, or my high school career. It started to get pretty big, and we would play in a nice little stadium, and we would fill it up. And again, it was bragging rights. So like when I made the transfer from one high school to the other high school, I was being the first at bat, and I ended up throwing a no-hitter against them. So there was a lot of people who were mad for me.
Nice little rivalry. The good old days. All right, let's talk about this Jays season. Are you surprised they're 14-12 given everything that they've gone through so far?
Yes and no. You knew that the pitching coming in was going to be a question mark, but I really like the moves that they made when they brought in a Steven Matz, and I continue to talk about him, and I think I'm going to continue to talk about him just because he's had such a good start to the season. You know, Ryu anchoring that staff, and then Robbie Ray, who came back, and he's looked super strong too. It's almost like when everything seems to be going right for them, something goes wrong and another guy hits the DL. So you just hope that, for me, I can't wait to see this whole team just finally put together and everyone off the DL and clicking in all cylinders. But it's good to see them 14-12. They came off a strong series against the Atlanta Braves, who are supposed to compete for a NL crown, and they did work. So it's exciting. Again, I want to see them fully healthy. We saw what Springer can do at the top of that lineup, and we've seen what Vladdy has been doing all season. And then to me, the most important guy that really nobody's talking about is Randall Grichuk and what he's been able to do to this point. You know, he came in as the biggest question mark, and I feel like he's not getting enough credit, but he's been a big, big part of that lineup, and credit to him and his hard work.
And playing center field, right? Like it's crazy to say this, but the Jays didn't exactly miss George Springer in center field, even though he's probably one of, if not the best center fielders in the game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Randall's a veteran guy. He understands what he had to do, and I think he came in with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah,
and it's totally normal to do that. You know, when you're kind of on the outside looking in, you're seeing these moves, and your name's not even mentioned. I think he took it upon himself, and he did it the right way. I'm going to go out there, I'm going to perform, and I'm going to prove everyone wrong, and that's what he's doing right now.
Okay, so you brought up Steven Matz in the midst of all this, and he gets to start tonight. He gets the call after his shortest outing of the season, and he's looked really good. How important, though, is the bounce-back game after giving up six runs, even though he wasn't hit that hard, but after giving up six runs in 3 2/3?
It's very important. I remember, for me, when I had a rough outing like that, it was like I couldn't wait to get back out there. And you go into the video room, you see what you did wrong, you make those adjustments. And again, he's got Pete Walker on his side. And he wasn't hit hard last outing, but it's just sometimes that's just the way pitching goes. So I'm looking forward to him having a big bounce back in today's outing. Oakland plays big, so it's a place where you can get away with a lot of stuff. So I'm looking forward to it.
So let me ask you this, because I mentioned earlier they had a couple off days, and with all the injuries to a depleted staff, it kind of worked out well for them. But now they're about to play 29 games in 31 days. How much tougher will it be juggling with this depleted staff?
It is pretty tough. It gets to the point, obviously, and for them having to come all the way to the West Coast,
yeah.
That's a toll itself, because you're so used to being in that 3 hour, you're in that East Coast time. And now you gain 3 hours. You're playing at seven o'clock here on the West Coast time, when it's really 10 o'clock, your whole body's completely thrown off. So it'll take a little bit of adjusting, but I think they're up for the challenge. You just hope that they get fully healthy and we've seen what they can do. We see what they're capable of doing with the staff, with offensively. And if they, once everything comes together, they're going to be dangerous.
It's funny, because a lot of folks thought that, and you mentioned it, that this was a question mark. The staff might struggle outside of Hyunjin Ryu. I'm going to ask you an outside looking in question. And I want your inside look. When I see a staff start to roll like this, like, I wonder how much of the success is contagious. And I know that it's talent, and I know that each guy has enough talent to make the major leagues. But once you get to that level, is there an idea that maybe these scouting reports that we're reading are really good, and you get confidence in trusting those scouting reports, and you get confidence in whoever is behind the plate and whatever fingers they're throwing down, that you can just nod and pitch? Like, is some of that contagious within a pitching staff?
100%.
Yeah,
I believe in that 100%. It's contagious. You see the guy, you see, for example, Steven Matz go today. He goes out there, deals. You get Anthony Kay tomorrow. He goes out there, feeds off what Matz just did. And it just trickles on down. It almost becomes a friendly competition where you want to do better than the guy ahead of you. And that's a good thing when you have stuff going like that. And the staff we knew, what the challenges that they were going to face ahead of this season, but they've lived up to it, and to have the second best ERA in the big leagues, I mean, it says a lot. Or yeah, in the American League,
yeah,
it says a lot, and they're doing what they're supposed to do and keeping the team, the offense, is in the game. So you just go out there and you pitch and you hope you get a few runs, and everything else will take care of itself.
Ricky Romero, a friend here on Tim and Friends on this Monday edition. Danny Jansen busted out of his terrible start to the season. And I know that you've talked about your struggles in the past. When you see a guy going through what Danny Jansen did, at least at the plate, because he was still calling a decent game, and as Buck kept mentioning, Buck and Tabby were mentioning, he was able to separate his catching duties from his hitting duties. But when you see a guy go through what he went through and to kind of bust out, what goes through your mind?
Leader.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing. He's a leader, man. I mean, I hate seeing guys struggle. There's nothing worse than seeing a guy struggle, especially when you know they're out there and they're working hard. But being a catcher and having so much responsibility on top of you, to be able to keep it all in offensively and not blow up and go out there and play defense and realize, like, hey, I got to be here for my pitcher. It's big time. And Danny has shown that he's going to go out there and, hey, the pitcher comes first, everything else. I mean, I want to do good offensively, but it's not working. But I still have a big-time job to do, and that's put the right numbers down and keep my pitcher with the best confidence that he can have.
I know Buck Martinez was talking about the Oakley glasses, the prescription glasses, not being delivered on time, and he went with the Ricky Vaughn glasses. Like, he's got to stay Ricky Vaughn. Like, he's got to wear his prescriptions until this is over, right? Like, he can't go back to those other ones.
Absolutely, yeah. You got to say what the baseball is all about, superstition. So if those got him going, he has to stick with those, and I'm sure he will.
You know who else I felt for this weekend was Alejandro Kirk, because he hadn't really swung the bat the way we had seen flashes of him in his short time in the major leagues. And then he just starts to get on a little bit of a heater, and you saw him come out of the box and you knew that he was in pain and was not, like, they were going to need a forklift to come get him out of the game because he wasn't going to come. How tough is it when you're a young player who's just finding the stroke and you get hurt? Like, I felt for him.
Yeah, me too. And I remember watching that game and I was like, man, it's just the last thing that these guys need. You finally get in a good role. You're starting to find your swing. I remember in 09 when I was starting to find my role as a starter in the big leagues, and then I had an oblique injury. It kind of threw me off for a whole month and a half that I was out. And hopefully it doesn't take that long for him to come back. But you clearly saw what happens when a guy starts playing a little bit consistently and he starts finding a stroke. And we saw the Alejandro Kirk that we saw last season. So you hope he comes back and is ready for the toll, because it's going to get, as the season moves along, it's going to get more and more tougher for these guys. So you just hope everyone's healthy by the end, and you're going to see hopefully the real Toronto Blue Jay team.
Yeah, I felt like that's what we got over the weekend, was like a flash of what it could be when when fully healthy. I know Jays fans don't get to see the Athletics all that much, and I know they've cooled off a little bit, but I always like telling Jays to appreciate the talent, or Jays fans to appreciate the talent on other teams, because you don't get to see them all the time. And there's a dude on this team, Ramon Laureano, who I love watching. Like, he plays center field all out. It seems like a human highlight reel. Is there a guy, is he the best player on this team? Is there a guy on this team that you like a lot watching? Because I always feel it's like kind of important to take some time and appreciate who you're watching.
Well, he's one of them. He's one of them that when he makes a throw from center field, it kind of, you're just in awe of it, because it always seems like he just throws the guy out. And another guy to keep an eye on, and I know he hasn't gotten off to a great start, is Matt Chapman. When he played, the way he plays defense, that he handles that hot corner, is, it's pretty unbelievable. And he's from my alma mater, Cal State Fullerton. So I like watching him play too. So for me, it's good timing. I like when the Jays come to the West Coast, because it's a 7 o'clock game, put the kids down, and I get to enjoy some late night baseball. I know for you guys, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's a little late for me with the kids and all that stuff, but the PVR gets a workout, no doubt. And by the way, I just wish that Ramon would play with a toothpick, because they call him Laser Ramon. And if he threw a guy out and he just throw the toothpick when he's done. Love it. Hey, great catching up with you, Ricky. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks, Sam.
There is Ricky Romero in California getting set, and he's contributing a lot to our Blue Jays Central as well. I think I cut him off there like a douchebag, but I'll continue powering through because I host the show alone. Sorry, Ricky. When we come back, he's a Canadian sporting legend, and after a 13-year wait and a long grind, Mike Weir is once again a champion. He took home his first Champions Tour victory over the weekend, and he will join us to talk about it. Meg! Right here on Tim and Friends. Did I cut him off, Jesse?
I don't think so.
No?
He was good with it.
This is Tim and Friends right here on the Sportsnet family of channels. We lose Sportsnet Ontario in about 45 minutes' time. Leafs and Habs on Sportsnet Ontario. Chris Johnston coming up in mere moments from now to discuss what could be a first-round matchup, or the Habs could end up catching the Winnipeg Jets, who are struggling right now, losers of six straight. They are in Ottawa tonight. There are 14 games in the NHL tonight, three of them in the North. We'll have full previews coming up in mere moments, Chris Johnston, as mentioned. But Jesse Rubinoff, as we were talking Jays with Ricky Romero, there was an update on one of the men we were talking about, Alejandro Kirk. Can you fill us all in?
If you're a Jays fan, you're going to want to start just pulling your hair out, or, like, I don't know what.
Already done.
So here's the deal. You talked about Alejandro Kirk. The news is not good. Ben Wagner tweeting out just a couple minutes ago that Alejandro Kirk is expected to miss significant time with his left hip flexor strain. Expectation is 6 weeks before a potential return, according to sources.
Wow. So that's not even before a potential return. Expectation is 6 weeks.
I mean, 6 weeks is a decent chunk. And what do you do now?
Yeah. We'll examine that a little later on in the show. But again, if you're just joining us, Alejandro Kirk, it appears as though we'll miss 6 weeks with the hip flexor. All right. Big weekend for Brights Groves only. Or one of the best. Mike Weir.
Mike Weir, just 161 yards. Just what he had to do right there.
Great swing.
Yeah, and a fist pump for Mike Weir.
He has been knocking on the door for quite some time.
Mike Weir finished things off. And Mike Weir, the 2003 Masters champion, wins for the first time on the PGA Tour Champions. Certainly earned this victory.
Mike's a proven champion. He's delighted to be back in the winner's circle.
It has been a long time coming for Mike Weir. Sure, he's been 50 for less than a year, but Canada's most famous golfer has been knocking on the door of the Champions Tour for a minute now before finally kicking down that door this weekend. It's his first title on either tour in over 13 years. If you are like me, when you hear the town of Brights Grove, you immediately think of my next guest. And another one of my guys, proven left is right and right is wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Mike Weir to the show. Mike, how are you?
Hey, Tim. How you doing, man?
I'm doing very well. I'm guessing that you're doing okay. And I know that you've probably been asked this a couple times now, but with some time for it to sink in, what did it feel like being back in the winner's circle?
Incredible feeling. It has been a while. I feel like I've had one hand on the trophy here in a couple of events on the Champions Tour, but haven't been able to get both hands on. And finally, yesterday, to execute those kind of shots down the stretch, the last four or five holes, to hit really quality shots like that, I think ultimately probably won it for me. I had a couple putts that I wish could have gone in and made it a little easier on myself. But I think overall, I think it was the ball striking, just hitting some really, really quality shots. So that was really satisfying.
Some of the guys in the show and I were talking before we got on air about how sometimes adversity can make it a little bit sweeter. I know it's been a long road back, but did it feel a little bit sweeter given how hard you've worked to get back there?
I think no doubt about it. I think, my career's been a little bit like that. It took a while for me to get going early in my career.
Yeah.
Through the Canadian Tour and lots of struggles and playing all over the world, trying to hone the craft, so to say, and finally break through, and then had some downtime and kind of down in my 40s, and to fight back, and it's really satisfying for me, my family, my team, everybody is just really, really happy, and I'm happy to share that with everybody.
Okay, we played this clip before the first break. What was this about not having your clubs? What went on here?
we had quite a rain delay on, I guess it was Friday, we were just killing time, and my girlfriend Michelle and I went to parked outside of this mall, this kind of outdoor shopping mall, and grabbed our umbrellas out of the trunk and shut the trunk, and then we were putting money in the meter as we walked away. And I said, honey, don't forget to lock the car. And I guess she hit the open the trunk button instead of lock the car. We didn't pay attention. We were trying to get out of the rain and just kind of walked off. My clubs, launch monitor was sitting front and center as the trunk was wide open. It was a little SUV, so it just kind of popped straight out. My clubs, everything was just sitting right there for well over an hour. And we were walking back, and I was like, oh, no. Trunks, I thought everything might be gone, but. Luckily enough,
some honest folk.
People at Texas are nice and honest, and they didn't touch anything.
Nice. That's amazing. One of my guests was making fun of me last week because I was talking about my high school injuries at 45, and it's because I know what it takes to try and come back. Was there ever a point when you thought there might not be a next winner's circle?
I think no doubt there was times that it definitely crossed my mind. You wonder when you're when you're struggling, and a win seems so far away. So I think, it definitely crossed my mind. But I think deep down, I my mindset is always to find a way to find a, to find a solution to the problem. And, you know, I sought out, you know, the experts and talked to a number of people. Some things didn't work, and I finally got a hold of something that's working with my coach, Mark Blackburn, and another good Canadian, Jason Glass, my strength and conditioning coach up in D.C.
Nice.
Got a, you know, Janet Alexander and my sports psychologist, Rich Gordon. We all just kind of, you know, kind of put a good plan together the last few years. And so it was a well-thought-out plan, I think.
I know you've come close a couple times here, and we mentioned it a couple times. And in team sports, I feel like you got to lose before you win. Like the old story about Gretzky's Oilers had to learn from watching the sacrifice of those old Islanders team. Did you feel like in Arizona or maybe Virginia last year in October, did it kind of feel like that? Or am I overthinking this and it just sucked and you didn't want it to suck anymore?
No, I think there's definitely some learning in those couple of events. I worked so hard, Tim, on my ball strength. That was the problem when I came off my elbow injury.
Right.
I got, you know, I flinch. I don't know if flinching at the ball is the right thing, but I was very hesitant to hit the ball, you know, just because of the injury. I didn't want to take a divot, and I just got in some terrible habits. So ball striking was the thing I really need to kind of fix and get through, not only physically, mentally. So I think I didn't spend as much time on my short game as you know, as a result. And that's what showed up in that tournament with Phil that we were battling head-to-head in Virginia was, shoot, you know, I had three putts, you know, a couple little up and downs that I should normally make, and that was the difference in the tournament. The ball striking was great. And same with, I felt like, Arizona a few weeks ago. I played very well, but in the last nine holes, my short game wasn't as sharp. So the last month, I've spent a lot more time on that and continue to try to refine that a little bit more and make it kind of come up to the same level as my ball striking is now. So, yeah, I think there was some learning through those couple of events.
The owner of a green jacket, Mike Weir, here on Tim and Friends. And I know there are a couple of folks out there cheering for John Daly. And I know you weren't paired with him in the last round, but between us and Canada, is Big John fun to be out and around on the Champions League Tour?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, John, you know, it's good to hear, you know, his outcome with his health, that he's feeling better. And with that, you know, he's playing better. I watched him swing on the range. He was in the group in front. You know, he had the crowd going. That was another thing. It was great to have the energy of the crowd and the fans. That was really energizing. And, you know, they were pulling for him. He made that eagle putt on 13. It was a big roar. And, you know, I luckily followed up with an eagle of my own right after. But it was, you know, it's good to see him back. It was good to see him back and healthy and playing good. He's, you know, people love him.
Is there a difference in how you guys approach it on the Champions Tour versus when you guys were slugging it out on the PGA Tour?
I think no doubt. Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine today and telling him, you know, the whole energy of the Champions Tour at this stage of the game, when you're 50, I mean, it's ultra competitive. Guys still want to win. Guys still work very hard on their games, but there's a different kinship. And I think, you know, pulling for one another, you know, like even the heat of battle, you know, when David Thom makes a good putt, you know, I'm excited for him. And Kim Petrovic, and I see JD rolling in those putts. I said to Mike Eddie, I'm like, that's great to see, you know, John playing well. And, you know, I want to win. I don't want those guys to falter. I want them to play their best. And if I happen to come out on top, it feels great. But there's real fun. Jerry Kelly and Scott McCarron and I flew over last night, and we had a little too much to drink. So that was kind of – that's fun to be able to share that with guys and have fun and enjoy the stage of life and still be competitive and have this great opportunity to still play the game we love for a living. And at this stage of the game, I want to smell the roses a little more, and it seems like most of the guys out here do as well.
Hey, listen, I know we had a little trouble hooking up with you, but we really appreciate you taking the time and doing this with us. It's been fun catching up, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Love to, Tim. Thanks, man.
Yeah, be well. There is Mike Weir, the former Green Jacket. I feel like now I've interrupted two guys. Ricky Romero and now Mike Weir. I was saying goodbye, and I just get to feel bad. I should have got him on Brooke Henderson. That was my next question, but we're running out of time here, and that's why I second-guessed myself. But next time when Mike Weir joins us, we're going to talk a little Brooke Henderson and what she's been able to do. All right, after the break, Chris Johnston joins me in studio. Leafs Habs for the first of three this week and potentially a first-round playoff matchup. We'll break it down with CJ, the Marathon Man, next, right here on Tim and Friends. Sorry, Mike Weir, I have one more thing to say.
Tim McAuliffe and friends of the show.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs. Hour number two here on Tim and Friends. Kenny the Jet Smith on the way after a very interesting Sunday in the NBA. Plus, Chris Johnston in studio had a three games in the NHL North tonight, 14 overall. Oilers Canucks regionally, Sportsnet West and Pacific later on. Leafs and Canadians coming up on Sportsnet Ontario. Unless the Habs jump the Jets, it looks like the Leafs and Habs will meet in the first round. And it has a couple of people excited.
And it is a signature matchup, rich in history.
Not much better than a night in Montreal with the Maple Leafs in town.
Some of the best things about being on a great team with great players is celebrating their excellence. And there's been many great examples of that this year with the Leafs.
What a remarkable season it's been for Auston Matthews. Consistency is really what's been so impressive.
A lot of new faces. Wayne Simmons comes home. Toughness up front and obviously Hall of Fame hands in Joe Thornton.
Things certainly heating up for the Canadians.
Habs offense has come alive.
They're getting contribution throughout the lineup.
And Montreal has come out firing.
Cole Caulfield, he watched a lot of Auston Matthews as a teenager.
He's going to eventually light the lamp, but if you're the Canadian, they would like to see it sooner than later.
Petry to Caulfield scores! Cole Caulfield, his first NHL goal, is a game winner in overtime.
Leafs Canadians on Sportsnet Ontario tonight. Hockey Central starts 6:30 Eastern. Jack Campbell, Jake Allen in goal. As mentioned, good chance these two meet in the playoffs for the first time since 1979. And Jake Muzzin, Nick Foligno both spoke on that a little earlier today.
We just had a meeting about that, actually. We were talking about looking at a little mini-series here against them. So it's definitely something we've talked about and we're thinking about. You know, we're going to see these guys next three games and maybe in the first round of playoffs. So it's little introduction to maybe the playoffs here.
I think anytime you're, you know, matching up right now, especially in the divisions, the way they're set, any mental notes you can take on any team, I'm sure they're doing the same to us. So it's just about understanding, you know, who you're up against, how they play. But more importantly, and I think the focus is always on how you're playing. And I think a lot of that takes care of itself too.
As for the Canadians, Dominic Ducharme said today that Carey Price should resume skating tomorrow, while Shea Weber, Thomas Tatar, and Paul Byron are all considered day-to-day. He also noted Brendan Gallagher likely won't be back in the regular season, but they're hopeful he will be back in time for the playoffs. He skated after practice with Shea Weber today. Meanwhile, after practice, Josh Anderson was asked about the Matthews-Marner connection. Here's what he said.
Obviously, with Matthews, you know, he's grown a lot, and you've seen what he's capable of doing this year. And it seems like I said before, he scores every game. So you got to always know where he is on the ice, because, you know, it seems that Marner usually likes to find him, and he's pretty good at that. And Matthews finding that open ice too. So I think we just have to have our heads on a swivel and just know where those guys are. And like I said, play hard on those guys, because, you know, they don't want to play defense either. So
be fun to watch. Oilers and Canucks regionally, Sportsnet West Pacific, 8 Mountain, 7 Pacific. It's the first of four straight between the two this week. Brayden Holtby starts in net for the Canucks, who will be missing Brandon Sutter and are missing 8 forwards in total, while the Oilers give Mikko Koskinen the start in goal. Oilers just need a point to clinch a playoff spot tonight.
It's definitely been a unique season. We all know that. You didn't know kind of how it was going to play out at the start of the year, playing these teams 9-10 times. So I think that we should be proud of where we are at this point. But, of course, the work's not done.
The Jets are desperate for a win as they face the Sens in Ottawa tonight. Winnipeg has lost 6 straight games and have just 6 regular season games left to try and sharpen the skills for the postseason. They do get a boost. Good news, Adam Lowry returning to the lineup after missing four games. Laurent Boursois will start in net for the Jets. Philip Gustafson will go for Ottawa. All right, let's break it down top to bottom with a man who just ran a one-man marathon for charity and adds another charity to the mix as he drops by my studio for a couple segments. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Johnston.
Good to be here, brother. Good to be here.
How are you?
I'm feeling good. I'm pumped. Playoff races are on.
I want to get to the marathon that you ran, but I'm going to leave it till the end here because I want to talk about the Leafs and the Habs. Montreal in an interesting spot because obviously you know that they want to build some confidence going into the postseason, but they also just need to get healthy.
They do, and man, it's so weird the way this is setting up with three games this week against the Maple Leafs. The fact that right now, I mean, look, there's permutations here, but most likely that the most likely outcome is we're going to have a Toronto-Montreal first-round series. And, you know, you're right. The Montreal wants to get going, but they're also going up against a team that they're probably going to be preparing for in 10 days' time, give or take. So, you know, I think that there's a lot that goes into this week for them. They also have a game sandwich in there with Ottawa, too, so that's complicating things. But, you know, they got to play a lot. They missed that week when they had a COVID shutdown, and now they're sort of paying the price for it. I think with the injuries, probably a little bit tied to this, but just that many games in a short amount of time.
If you're the Montreal Canadiens and you're in a spot where you've kind of been making sure that you're in the postseason, is it rest? Is it rust? Is it a combination of, like, what are you looking at for the final six games of the season, especially when they're condensed like this?
Well, you got to get a Carey Price answer at some point. Yeah. You know, he started skating again, and presumably we'll get some games here before the end of the regular season. You know, I think you probably have to prioritize, though. I mean, maybe a little bit of rest once you get the official X beside your name and everything's, you know, done and dusted. Maybe you give some of your veterans a game off or something like that. But, you know, I don't think they're going to have a luxury of, you know, preparing for this thing perfectly. I mean, that's the COVID season probably in a nutshell.
Right.
Everyone's just trying to hold it together right now. Obviously, the Jets would love to have Nikolaj Ehlers in their lineup. We could go down across the country. There's various situations here. But, you know, I think for the Canadians, getting confidence, winning games, that's probably more important than anything at this stage.
Okay, the Leafs are an interesting story to me because it feels like every Leaf fan hasn't been able to enjoy what looks like a wire-to-wire win in the division because all they're looking forward to is the first round. Like, is there some sort, like, can we caution Leaf fans? Is there some sort of joy that they can take, appreciation in this wire-to-wire win in the North, or is it all about that first round?
Well, they should have. I mean, it's almost too late, right? It's like telling someone, hey, the party's over in half an hour. You should have enjoyed this party because look at the stats. I mean, this is the best points percentage a Leafs team has ever had in history.
Yeah.
Auston Matthews is having the best goal-scoring season, arguably, in Leafs history. Mitch Marner, you know, could finish third in points. It's been decades since any Leafs has done that. I mean, look, individually as a team, this is as good as it gets in a long, long time for this organization. Almost certainly going to clinch the North Division. And you're right. If they lose, I get it. If they lose in round one, the whole thing kind of goes for naught. But it's hard for me to lecture fans. But you should have been enjoying this if you weren't.
It feels like, and I understand why. I don't know if we've ever seen a franchise like this, right? I mean, 1967, your last cup win. You haven't won a round in like 20 years. So I get the angst surrounding what you do in the postseason, but wire to wire for the Toronto Maple Leafs and their fan base is in this spot where they're like, yeah, but
if I'm not mistaken, this will be the third time since the 60s that they finished first in a regular season in their division.
Right.
Like, that's insane for, right, you know, how passionate the fan base is, how in the pre-salary cap days they had money to spend that other teams didn't.
Right.
You just dumb luck somewhere along the line. You have a great season. You know, this is, you're right. This is the Toronto Maple Leafs. They have historically fallen on their faces. And this year, I think since February 2nd, they've led the division. And was it 11 points right now? I mean, basically, they've got this thing wrapped up.
Yeah.
So this should have been fun, but you're right. I spent a lot of time on hockey Twitter. I don't seem like too many people are out there having fun.
No. Chris Johnston in studio here on Tim and Friends. I get this feeling, and this is depending on the way that you qualify your goaltenders. Jack Campbell is tied fifth in the NHL with a save percentage of .927. He's tied fifth in goals against average at .207 on the year. And yet there is this consternation around them. There's this, I'm not sure. He's 15-2-1. Like, that's that's your starter game one of the postseason, is it not?
For me, it is, yeah. Like, obviously, I'm aware of the conversation going on. You know, just Frederik Andersen hasn't played a game since March 19th. And I get that, you know, maybe he will play games here before the playoffs. But even if he does, we're talking one or two, and they might be in the American Hockey League. So, you know, as much as you believe in him, I think that's a great fallback option to have. But, you know, Jack Campbell, to me, has done more than enough to show that he can play well behind this team. You know, he's benefited. Look, the Leafs of yesteryear, even just the last couple of years, did not play nearly as well defensively as this team does in terms of the shots they give up and the type of shots they give up. And so he's been in a position to succeed, but he's thrived there. And, you know, to me, he's their starter game one. And most teams, you know, Vasilevsky's an outlier last year, but most teams need two goalies to go on a long playoff run. And so I just think you go to Freddie at some point if he stumbles.
You mentioned Frederik Andersen in the AHL. Can you explain, and I know that there are those out there that don't really understand why he would be playing in the NHL, but this is the new world and the new salary cap and the new, I don't want to call it manipulation, but maybe just a little geometry here?
Well, and it's not a foregone conclusion that that's what will happen.
Okay.
But here's an option. When a player has been on long-term injured reserve, which is a long injury like he's had, mm-hmm. you can go to what's called a conditioning loan out of LTI, in which you either get up to 3 games or 6 days in the American Hockey League. The player has to agree to it. A team can't just say, you're going there.
Right.
And presumably that's happened here. I mean, at some point when Frederik Andersen spoke to the media, he said, we have multiple ways for me to play games. So, you know, it was clear that he has an idea what's going on. And it's just a way to gauge whether the player has come through his injury okay without having him throwing him right into the NHL. And, you know, in fact, the Leafs did this. It'll be long forgotten, but Jake Muzzin came back from an injury out of the All-Star break of last season, so February 2020. Time's a flat circle right now. Yes. And he did play one game for the Marlies before rejoining the Leafs. So, I mean, right. This is something they've done. I wonder if Riley Nash, who they got at the trade deadline, you might see him do something similar. Right. He's been out with a knee issue.
Almost forgot about
And he
Riley
started
Nash,
skating yeah. again. He hasn't been practicing with the Leafs yet. But, you know, this is an option for them. And the key here is they remain on LTI when that happens. So there's no cap issues with this. This basically can happen legally. And so, you know, I could see a scenario where they go that route, but certainly no one with the team's confirmed or told me that.
We're going to do the Oilers and the Canucks in the next block. We're going to talk about the Jets and the Sens and the Jets struggles. But before we move on, I know you mentioned Carey Price there. Have you heard anything on, and I get why Montreal is kind of mum on this because they've gone through this before where they say, well, Carey Price, it's just a minor injury, and it turns out not to be minor. And maybe that's why I'm wondering every day when we're going to get the next update on Carey Price. And it seems like we got a little bit of one today, but I don't know what that means.
No, I don't think anyone does. And look, we're basically in playoff mode here in every team situation about what they're revealing on injuries. I mean,
right. This
is the point where everything is a mystery. Everyone's day-to-day, each and every day. But, you know, the fact that Carey Price is on the ice tells you I think he's trending towards a return. And, you know, as much as this was a tough year when he was healthy for Carey Price, you know, that might be a more interesting goalie decision of any of the ones we have to talk about. I mean, you know, if he comes back and plays, what the Canadiens do, just because he was great for them in the bubble.
Right.
We know what he means to that franchise. And, you know, are they really going to have him backing up if he is healthy behind Jake Allen? You know, that's a difficult decision.
Let's get to the Jets and the Senators. How important do you think it is for the Jets to get back on track before they get to the postseason?
It's essential. I mean, six straight losses.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all lived this thing. We were talking about Leafs fans, but, you know, the Canadian markets aren't the most stable place right now. And you know, when Paul Maurice is saying, don't panic yet after the last game that they lost, you know, I think it's clear that some of the discussion outside the walls of their dressing room is coming inside, and they're aware of where this is. And look, I mean, I said off the top, the Leafs and Habs are almost for sure. Well, all of a sudden, there is a scenario now where Winnipeg could drop to fourth. And you know, without this six-game losing streak, you know, that probably wouldn't even be in play. So, you know, they've had terrible timing. The Ehlers injury is, you know, just the worst time to ever have it happen, I would say, to, you know, in this run up to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And, you know, to have, you know, Hellebuck maybe struggle a little bit. I know he's not playing tonight, but, you know, I do think that confidence is a question for them, and they got to get confidence by getting some victories.
The reason why I love CJ in studio, not only is it Saturday headlines, not only is it the information that he brings each and every time, not only is it the charity work that he does, but he's also a fan of other sports. Did you watch the Jays this weekend?
I did.
Did you enjoy the Jays this weekend?
Yeah, well, when they win, I always, I am I'm such a bad fan. Like, honestly, it's funny because on one hand, I might scold a hockey fan,
right,
of which I don't really have fandom at this point. But, like, the Jays, it's just like win, loss, home run. There's sort of no nuance to the right. way I'm watching the Blue Jays. And so, you know, seeing the George Springer home runs, and particularly the one that bounces off the school, and right. Vladdy doing what he's doing, getting the wins over the Braves, I mean, that's nice.
Okay, we have an update on George Springer that I might.
I hate to do this to CJ. Whoa, now. He's just been so positive.
It was. He was smiling.
What did I walk into?
We've been talking about this all day. He's been kind of limping. He was pulled out of the last game, and we were waiting to see the lineup for today. Jesse, you have the lineup for
today?
The
Blue Jays have released the lineup, indeed, for tonight's game against the Oakland Athletics, and George Springer not in the lineup tonight.
So Gurriel will DH, and playing center field once again is Randall Grichuk. So we were a little worried about what would happen with George Springer coming out of that Sunday game. So it looks like he's not in the lineup. And we're not going to hear from Charlie Montoyo until probably about 45 minutes from now.
Okay.
So the update. Maybe he's just going to sit a game out because there's no IL, right? We haven't seen him go on the IL yet.
Not a great half hour, though. Alejandro Kirk out 6 weeks at least. George Springer not in the lineup tonight. So sorry to do this to you, CJ.
Wow, I feel like I walked into this one. You guys just wanted to smack me, you know?
We did not. I just wanted to make sure that everyone knew your fandom was here, and then we wanted to follow up with it. So it doesn't mean anything yet, but we'll wait to hear from Charlie Montoyo and see if there's any stint on the IL for George Springer.
I'm jumping to conclusions, though. I'm not going to lie.
I was jumping to conclusions last week when he wasn't playing center field. And then he hit a 470-foot bomb. I'm like, okay, maybe he's okay. But it looks like he's going to need some time. And this is, I think, what we've seen over the last little while for the Jays is that they might be pretty good. And you might need him when it matters most. So get him right now, as long as he can stick around 500.
Yes.
All right. Agreed. CJ's going to stick around. And when we come back, Jets Sens, Oilers Canucks, I have a theory on one Mike Smith. Connor McDavid rightfully gets most of the attention for the Oilers, but is Mike Smith the best goalie in the North this year? We'll investigate next on Tim and Friends. Hear me out on this one. Hear me out on this one. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. A reminder, Leafs Canadians coming up regionally. Sportsnet Ontario Hockey Central. David Amber, Elliot Friedman, Anthony Stewart just minutes away. Hang with us here. 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, 7 Pacific. Oilers and Canucks regionally. Sportsnet West and Pacific. It is the first of four straight meetings this week, as the Canucks have very slim playoff chances hanging in the balance. Connor McDavid continues his chase for 100 points in 56 games, while Mikko Koskinen gives Mike Smith a break between the pipes for the Oilers. And while Connor McDavid gets the attention, and deservedly so, let's not discount what Mike Smith is doing for the Oilers this season. He might just be the most important man in the North. Stay with me here. Leon is Leon, Connor is Connor, but after swinging and missing on Jacob Markstrom, many thought this could be another lost season for the two Hart Trophy winners, but Smith has been a rock for a team that has struggled mightily with its goaltending in the recent past. Don't look now, but Smith's 18-6-2 on the season. His 230 goals against average is seventh lowest in the NHL among keepers that have played 25 or more games. His 924 save percentage, good for fifth in the league with the same 25-game standard. It's not a stretch to argue that Smith gives the Oilers the most steady goaltending in the North heading into the playoffs, with some of the uncertainty around the North, at least right now. So while the Oilers have the last two Hart Trophy winners on their roster by year-end, could the X-factor Mike Smith brings to the postseason at the tender age of 39 possibly make him the most important man in the North? CJ, you buying what I'm selling, or is this the biggest stretch since Cicero in a unitard?
I'm buying it, actually.
Yeah.
Certainly just how important he is to their team, because look, I think we all looked at their goaltending and thought that's going to be a fatal flaw.
Right.
Because, you know, as you rightly mentioned there, they were big players on Markstrom. I think there was a point in the day or two leading up to free agency where the Oilers thought Jacob Markstrom was going to be theirs. and they didn't really end up with a great fallback option. At least it didn't seem. And kudos to Mike Smith, because, you know, I certainly have probably written him off at some point. Usually when you're my age,
the world did,
and you're in the NHL, like usually, like quite honestly, right, we're getting down to that point. And you know, in Mike Smith's case, you know, last year didn't really go great. You know, it felt like a marriage of convenience. It felt like they didn't have another option, and he, you know, he lived there. He felt like that was okay. And look, he's been way better than that. I mean, 924, I'm not going to scoff at that. I think you can make a case that he should at least get a little bit of love for Vezina. Like, I'm not saying he's going to win it.
Right.
But, you know.
But he could end up top three.
He could. And yeah, that's significant. I mean, that means something. It means you're a finalist. There's financial award attached to that. But, I mean, it's also kind of historically that would be pretty impressive. And so I wouldn't have guessed that. And, you know, right now, Hellebuck's got a few questions about him. I mean, he's, let's face it, he's really at this point, are we talking, is he better than Connor Hellebuck? And certainly the last week or two, yes, but over the season, maybe.
Yeah, I'm kind of playing with semantics a little bit here, and I understand it. Carey Price is out, so you're not sure. You might put Carey Price ahead of Mike Smith, and had Connor Hellebuck not gone through the stretch that Connor Hellebuck has gone through, you would, I mean, I've said at times in the last little while that Connor Hellebuck might be the best goaltender on planet Earth, but right now, if you look at it, Jack Campbell, Mike Smith are among the two better goalies in the North, because you at least have a body of work with which to work from.
And look what they're paid. I mean, not to harp on that fact, but I mean, just it illustrates why it's so difficult with goaltenders. And you know, Jacob Markstrom's season hasn't gone as planned, but he's a great example. I mean, there's a reason he got the contract he did from the Flames, right, because of how great he was in Vancouver last year, how important he was to the Canucks' success, and it hasn't yet worked in year one of that deal. Now, maybe next year, Jacob Markstrom, if we're having a similar conversation, is the one in the spotlight. You know, Jack Campbell, when the Leafs traded for him back in February 2020, like, no one was like, this could be their next number one talk. And now,
no,
at least you can have that conversation. I'm not going to declare that he is, but it seems possible. And, you know, who would have known? And certainly Mike Smith, I wasn't expecting this from.
It just speaks to how wide open these playoffs are, because I can say that and in the same breath understand that if we saw Mikko Koskinen and Frederik Andersen in the postseason, it wouldn't be a huge surprise.
No, it could be game two.
Yeah, like it could be.
It could happen quickly. I mean, when I look league-wide too, Timmy, like, obviously you got Andrei Vasilevskiy with Tampa. I mean, that's, like, to me, the only bona fide Stanley Cup contender who I know is playing for them in the playoffs. I mean, Vegas, that's semantics too, because they got one of Leonard, right, or Marc-Andre Fleury, who's had a great year for the Golden Knights. But, you know, in Colorado, you could see something. You know, Carolina's a team with a bit of a couple options there. And you know, Toronto, you know, Edmonton, this is going to be an interesting season and you know, postseason, I think, because of all this stuff.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see, it's always been in the past, you play that one goaltender, that's your guy, you ride him in the playoffs. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see half of the teams playing two goalies in the postseason.
Well, we might have back-to-backs in this playoffs, I think, you know, because we got to get the cup handed out before the Olympics at some point, and the North Division is going to start late.
Listen, we mentioned you're a marathon man, and I want to give full credit where credit is due, because a couple of days ago you ran a full marathon, and you're in here talking. I would be soaking in Epsom salts still, and you did it for a wonderful cause, our friends at Conquer COVID 19, and you can still donate at conquercovid19.ca. How did it come about, and how did it go?
Well, there's the finish. I was excited to finish. It went really well. I mean, exceeded my expectations. If I'm going to be honest, it was a little bit beyond my comfort zone just to do it publicly, to do kind of a race of one, as you mentioned, to talk about it. But, I mean, what a rewarding experience that, you know, so many donations came in. Obviously, a lot of nice notes from people, even just people out there that, you know, found out about my run streak. I'm at 369 days and counting now. That was me marking a year with that marathon. And you know, I've gotten a few notes from people saying it's, you know, got them off the couch or just got them thinking about doing something similar. And let's face it, I think we're all looking for something in COVID times. And, you know, for getting to do this for me was like, it's been a real driver to keep me sane and on the right side of things. And you know, if it can help someone else, that's what's most important.
And it just stresses how, I mean, listen, you're a living proof of it because you're saying it, but how much physical exercise can help you get through things like we're all going through at this time. And not to mention what you raised for, and listen, if you want to donate, again, the website, conquercovid19.com. But you just went to do something good for someone else, get something out of it yourself, and you ended up raising like I mean, I saw like $10,000.
Yeah, it was $10,000 on the day. The latest number I got this morning was $15,000 because the donations have still been coming. And you know, maybe someone's listening right now or is going to see this on social after and donate as well. I mean, I would encourage you to. Although, you know, it's not about attaching it to my name or anything, but it's just nice that that has come about. I mean, the Conquer COVID-19 charity, really quickly for those, I'm sure everyone's seen the T-shirts, but you know, that was started just by volunteers trying to make a difference in COVID times. You know, I started running again in COVID just to try to keep myself going. And then I thought, you know, it's sort of a grassroots thing. Why not try to put some energy in their direction? So, you know, anything we can do to help them out because they're doing the real important work.
Six people on a WhatsApp started Conquer COVID-19. Ryan Reynolds jumps on board and they're delivering PPE all across the country when we needed it and still doing great work for our heroes in healthcare on the front lines that unfortunately are still battling this nonsense as we speak. Good on you, bud. And how you feeling?
I'm feeling like I just ran a marathon. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to be a hero. It's been a sore couple days, but it's the good kind of sore. I'm very satisfied.
Did you have a couple beers after?
Oh, yeah. All right. But not too many. I was falling asleep early.
There is Chris Johnson again if you want to donate. ConquerCOVID19.ca. Hockey Central coming your way on Sportsnet Ontario ahead as the Leafs and Canadians. We will continue on the other regions plus Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Kenny the Jet Smith. Next, as we talk ball on Tim and Friends. Thanks, CJ. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. The Raptors' surprising upset win over the Lakers last night, keeping themselves in consideration for the final play-in spot in the East. Now, LeBron James left the game with an ankle injury, will not play tonight against the Nuggets. The Lakers fell into a tie for seventh in the West with their loss last night, and LeBron did not hold back talking about the NBA play-in tournament.
It doesn't matter at the end of the day if I'm not, 100%, close to 100%. It don't matter, you know, where we land, you know. So, you know, that's my mindset. And, you know, if this happens to we end up at sixth or fifth or whatever the case may be, or if we end up in the, you know, the playoff, whatever that thing is, whoever came up with that need to be fired. But whatever.
Let's continue that conversation. Our next guest needs no introductions. All he's done, All-American, two-time world champion. He was second in the dunk competition. That wasn't enough, so he also went in the three-point competition. And now he's just among the best analysts in the game and a regular on Tim and Friends. Ladies and gentlemen, Kenny the Jet Smith. Kenny, what up?
Hey, guys. How you doing, man? How you doing?
We're doing all right. We're doing better than
I'm kind of tight, man. Hold on a second. My head looks big here. Wait a minute.
Well, get in line, friend.
There you go.
get in line, friend. If your head looks big, you're on the right show.
No question.
So, LeBron, this is interesting. Like, seemingly the Lakers are going to have a tough route here. And he's complaining about the playoff format. Is there a legit argument to be made, or is he just lamenting the fact that he's going to have to play his way in, perhaps?
It was all good just a week ago, right?
Yeah.
You know, and no problems there. No one, he didn't say anything about that play-in tournament until they're like one game away. Then now it makes no sense. You know, I always thought that seven shouldn't be in it. I thought 8, 9, and 10 should be, you know, they should be in a play-in tournament.
Right.
You know, with only 72 games, it's going to create the anxiety. But, you know, the Lakers 36-28, they could be 10 games over 500 and have to play in. Like, to me, you deserve to be in the playoffs when you're 10 games over or close to that playing in. So I just think 7 shouldn't be in it. But I love the fact that there's a play-in tournament. That guy should get a bonus.
So you don't think he should be fired?
No, he get a bonus, man. Could make it, because this is what, you know, I do March Madness, obviously.
Yep.
And that's what we always do at March Madness is we have that, hey, this is it. One game elimination. You got to get it done. If you don't get it done, what happens? So for me, this is a great opportunity. I'm excited.
Are you worried about the Lakers? Are they in some trouble here?
I would say the injuries have put them in trouble for sure. I don't think that they are geared to winning an NBA championship unhealthy. You know, LeBron James, the way he dominates the basketball, and he said it himself, if we're not healthy, if I'm not healthy, it doesn't matter where we land. But if I am healthy, I'm not really worried about it. But I don't think he's healthy. He knows he's not. He's obviously sitting out again. The Raptors came in there and did a heck of a job moving the basketball, playing great. Kyle Lowry, they looked like not only an NBA All-Star, he looked like the MVP of the league last night.
It's funny, we show Kendrick Perkins comes on the show every once in a while, and we showed a tweet that he had yesterday, and it was LeBron basically doing the J.R. Smith saying, why didn't you get me this point guard that's up here tearing us up? Do you feel like the Lakers needed to add a little bit more to this team to give them a legit shot in what is a really interesting Western Conference?
No.
No.
They have two of the best five players in basketball.
Right.
Like, what is, you know, and they won it last year. They, like, these teams, like, are so spoiled in these fans. Like, you have, arguably, is Anthony Davis a top five player? Without question. Is LeBron James a top five player? You have two of them. You ask the Toronto Raptors, do you think they need something else? You know, when you have one of the top five players in basketball, you're able to ascend into different levels because your game plan actually works. You could have a game plan and actually implement it. When you don't have the top five players in basketball, you have to kind of hope that the game plan works.
Right.
No, the Lakers need nothing else. They just need to get healthy.
Kenny the Jet Smith joining us here on Tim and Friends. Anything to draw from Giannis versus KD yesterday, or was that regular season versus playoffs?
Well, we Giannis has been the MVP, of course. So we're not surprised at what he does. I think overall, his ability to play multiple positions on the offensive and defensive end makes him so hard to guard. And when his jump shot and mid-range shot is going in, because he gets to the basket and he's like, go gadget, man. If you're anybody who knows what that cartoon was, like, his arms just extend to the rim like no one else is in the history of the game. Not even in basketball, in the history of the game, his extension. But his ability to defend when he wants to, he could be like KD at times was when early in his career, they were premier defenders, not just offensive players.
Yeah, the block on KD, like 7-foot step backs don't get blocked very often, Kenny.
7-foot guard versus 7-foot guard. You know, that's what that was. That was two guards playing in a mid-range game. And, you know, only a guy like him could have done that. But his, like I said, he's a premier defender. KD's a premier defender when he's 100%, honestly. He's not just an offensive player. When he first came into the league with Oklahoma City, you know, he would guard the toughest guys every single night. So to me, this is just a continuation of that.
So let me read off to you the Milwaukee Bucks in the postseason. Lost first round, lost first round, lost conference finals, lost conference semifinals. Do you think that they're better than that? Do you think that this could be the year? Or with James Harden, are the Nets just too good?
This could be the year because I think Drew Holiday separates them from what they were.
You love Drew Holiday, eh?
Yeah, well, I just think they needed someone where Giannis isn't always facilitating the play.
Right.
He could be finishing the play. Giannis is just probably a better finisher than a playmaker. But he doesn't get the finish in the last years. He always had to make the play and finish, or just make the play. With Drew Holiday, he could become a better finisher. I think, you know, the loss of Malcolm Brogdon a couple years ago was bigger than they thought. And that was another guy who could make Giannis, help Giannis just be a finisher. So for me, that was probably the biggest thing that I saw. But the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, their whole season rides on, do they get to the NBA Finals? If they don't get to the NBA Finals, it will not be a good season for them. You know, we know that. You know, it's championship or championship series or bust.
Kenny and Jeff Smith here on Tim and Friends. We've been talking about the rest of the NBA. We haven't brought up the Raptors, and we also haven't brought up the Clippers. The Clippers have been playing some real basketball of late. They're an interesting team. I don't know how many people think they're legitimate contenders. I think a lot of people are waiting to see what the postseason brings. And I don't know if anyone's reputation has been hurt by the last year or so more than Paul George. Are the Los Angeles Clippers going to hurt some people in the postseason? Or are you waiting to see what team shows up in the postseason?
Well, the reason I don't bring up the Clippers on this show is because then I got to talk about Kawhi. Then if I talk about Kawhi, then I talk about people.
What would have been, Kenny? Kenny, what would have been? Why'd we just stay?
Yo, I don't want to do that to you guys out there.
Let's be honest.
I'm not going to do it.
We got our big kids pants on. Tell us, what would have happened if he had stayed, Kenny?
If he stays, you know, they're the premier team in the East, and probably more guys would have wanted to be there. I think they, you know, he bolted probably a year too early. But you know, he's not doing more in the West than he did in the East with Toronto. You know, he just has more sunshine. He lives, you know,
and more we have family palm
trees and sunshine, you know, but these moments of hugs, they don't exist right now. And these moments were, could have been continuous. They were going to be an Eastern Conference finalist team for the next 3-4 years, the way they were currently built. And I'm surprised he left. But, you know, you can stop crying now. He's gone. But I think the one thing about the Clippers is that they're an unproven commodity. Like, when the heat gets hot, they get out of the kitchen. You know? They haven't stayed in there in those moments when adversity hits. Not when things are going well. They've been really good when they're up three, you know, they're in regular season, they get a little 5-game win streak, 7-game. But when they get down 2-1 in a series, they haven't shown that they can close out series or come back when there's adversity that's hit. That's why no one's believing in them right now.
Kenny, I don't cry because it's over. I smile because it happened, okay?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You tell that to every divorcee out there.
All right, I need to ask you a question of the league, okay? Last night I saw a wonderful tweet put out there about Stanley Johnson and what he did to LeBron James and how we need to get it out of the league. I want to show you what we saw last night in the Los Angeles Lakers-Toronto Raptors game where Stanley Johnson obviously did not touch LeBron James at all. And LeBron did the old comb out the fro. He got hit hard in the head. Like, what if you see this and you're in the league, what do you say to an opponent? Do you, like, you got me? Is there, like, what is this?
Well, the league fines you for doing that, honestly, now. You know, that's, you know, flopping. Because that was a flop, you know. And Stanley Johnson, you know, who I love dearly like a nephew son. You know, I've known Stanley since he was 9 years old. He played for my AAU teams. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he and his mom, rest her soul, we were great friends. She brought him to me and said, I need a pro to coach my son. So I coached him from third grade all the way up to eighth grade here in the United States.
Oh, nice.
So he is like my heart, but he got jumped.
He got jumped
by the king. He got jumped. But, like, you know, LeBron is, like, I used to say this about Vince Carter. When Vince Carter would get hurt, it was like he got shot.
Yeah.
Like, LeBron gets semi-hit. It's like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my God, he got shot. Who's the sniper in the arena? We need to get the FBI, the CIA, get everyone out here because Get the Toronto National Guard, everybody here, because this guy just got killed. In actuality, like it was a running joke. I was like, is Vince gonna get shot tonight? Is he gonna get shot tonight? And he goes down. And LeBron does the same thing. He takes that imaginary bullet. He's the Michael B. Jordan of basketball. He takes those imaginary bullets.
Yeah. He's a great actor. I mean, this, like, when I saw it live, I had no idea. Until I saw the tweet after, I was like, oh my goodness, he wasn't even touched.
He got touched, but he never got touched in the head. No. That's the funny. That's what I was going to say. He never got, well, there was a graze. There was a light graze. There was a light graze at the beginning.
Get out of here with the light graze. Light graze. Man, knock some hair out of that head. Listen, we always love catching up with you. Thank you very much for taking the time and doing this with us.
Man, thanks for having me, man.
All right, be good.
All right.
There is Kenny the Jet Smith live from, I believe, his home in California right now. What was the quote? Like 24 hours of sunshine, or was it just 12 months of sunshine? It was one of the two. It can't be 24 hours of sunshine because that doesn't make sense. But it would just rub it in the face of us still waiting for that sunshine to make it up north of the border. You hear Jesse Rubinoff's laugh. Last Call with Jesse Rubinoff is next.
Bring it.
We'll do it on Tim and Friends across the Sportsnet family of channels. Next. Welcome back to Tim and Friends on this Monday. This week's Monday Tip of the Cap is brought to you by the number four. Four Canadians selected in this weekend's NFL draft, equaling the record set in 2014. Coquitlam native Javon Holland was the first selected defensive back from Oregon, going to the Dolphins, 36th overall. Minnesota cornerback Benjamin St-Juste from Montreal went in the third round, 74th overall to the Washington football team. Brampton's Josh Palmer, receiver, Tennessee. He also went in the third round of the Chargers, while Chuba Hubbard, running back out of Sherwood Park, went to the fourth round to the Panthers. Now, four was also the magic number for Kyle Larin. The Canadian forward scored four goals for Beşiktaş in the Turkish Super League on Saturday. The 26-year-old from Brampton now has 19 goals on the season, which ranks him second in a pretty good league on a pretty good team. All right, time now for Last Call in Fort. We bring in Jesse Rubinoff. What's going on, Jesse?
Let's do it, Timmy. Evgeny Malkin will return to the Penguins lineup tonight when they visit the Philadelphia Flyers. Malkin has been out since March 16th, though the Pens have the second best record in the NHL over that stretch. Shout out to Brian Burke.
Yes.
Perhaps. Meanwhile, the Stars activated Tyler Seguin today, and he'll be a game time decision tonight against the Panthers. Seguin has not played since game six of last year's Stanley Cup Finals. Dallas currently 3 points back of Nashville for fourth place in the Central Division. Will Seguin's return be enough to get the Stars into the postseason? What say you, Timmy?
I hope so, because if the Dallas Stars end up in the postseason, and it will take a little bit of a run for them, it could be interesting to see or to note that we could see a Lightning Stars matchup in the postseason, which would be a Stanley Cup rematch. Now, depending on where you get that, it could be for the first time ever in the first round. Although, as I look down at the standings, that might be tough to do. Although the Lightning are only 2 points back of the Hurricanes. So imagine they get in as the four seed. The Lightning surpass the Hurricanes for the one seed. You have a Stanley Cup rematch the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs only in 2021. So I think seeing Seguin come back, and he posted an amazing video on his Twitter account. We'll retweet. I'm pretty sure we retweeted the Sportsnet's thievery of Tyler Seguin's tweet. But we'll send it back out there for people to see, because it is an amazing journey that we oftentimes forget. And when Ken Reed was ripping me about my injuries and going back to high school about talking for those injuries prove I did something in my life. Ken Reed.
There you
and
go.
Tyler Seguin coming back from those injuries is way too often completely forgotten. The guy just disappears for 5 months and comes back. Ho-hum. It's never ho-hum.
Yeah, no, he's got to ramp it up a little bit. They're not really in control of their own destiny, so they're going to need some help. But I wouldn't want to play the Dallas Stars in the playoffs.
In the first round?
Yeah.
No.
No, thank you. No, thank you. Moving to baseball. Been kind of a downer day for baseball in terms of injuries. The Dodgers announced today that Dustin May will undergo season-ending Tommy John surgery after May left Saturday start with pain in his right arm. The expected timetable for recovery is between 12 and 16 months. After starting the season 13-2, the Dodgers are 4-10 in their last 14 games, falling out of first place in the NL West, and they're down to four healthy starting pitchers. Sounds like a team around here.
No, it doesn't, because they had David Price in their bullpen to begin the season. Now, I know he's on the IL, but their four that they still have remaining are Kershaw, Bauer, Buehler, and Urias. Like, come on, man. Like, that
is, you don't think that matches up with Mats and Stripling and Ray? And
they've lost May, Price, and Gonsolin, and they still have four really good starting pitchers.
Yeah.
So woe are the Dodgers and their ridiculous payroll. I get it. They've been hit hard. They've been harder than most. but they also have way more than most. So there's a little bit of, I understand there's some injuries here, and there's a little bit of, well, they're the Dodgers, and they've got a lot.
Do you think this is enough to derail their season? Because they haven't been playing well
lately. Listen, we were talking about the Dodgers maybe in the Seattle Mariners 120-win category. That's done.
Yeah.
But I still think they're going to win the West, though it will be tight.
Okay, so we had CJ in here. We were talking about marathon running.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's move over to sprinting, because DK Metcalf will run the 100 meters at the USA Track and Field Golden Games on Sunday with a spot in the US Olympic trials on the line. Metcalf will likely need to break 10.2 seconds to qualify for the Olympic trials.
10.2.
Do you think he can do that? I mean, just looking at the video.
Okay, here's the deal. There's two things here. There's sprinter speed, there's football speed, there's pad speed, there's helmet speed. There's all these things that work in here. I saw a tweet out there that said that if he ran his top speed on the chase down for 100 meters, that's a 9.8800. Now, I don't know if that includes the start, because you've got to go from a standing position or a crouch position in the blocks to get to that top speed.
The start might get him.
And he isn't even the fastest. Like, John Ross ran a 4.22.40 at the combine. Yeah. DK Metcalf's time was 4.33 over 40 meters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Christian Coleman, who is a world-class sprinter, no matter how many times he misses a test, he's still a world-class sprinter. And in 2017, he got pissed off at all these football players talking about how fast they were, so he ran a 40. Do you know how fast Christian Coleman's 40 was?
Tell me.
4.12.
Yeah.
4.12.
That's lightning quick, yeah.
DK Metcalf, so he might get to 10.2, but 10.2 is not world, I mean, it's, I guess it's world-class speed, but it's not finals, it's not ridiculous. You got to break 10 to be a world-class sprinter.
Okay, he's probably doing this for him. He wants to see if he can do it, but I would probably pay to see Tyreek Hill and DK Metcalf or some of the other fastest guys in a 100-meter dash.
And we used to do this. This is as long as time you've wanted to see this. And every time we've done it in the past, they've got their ass handed to them by the real sprinter.
I just want to see their times. I'm going to be interested in DK Metcalf. Maybe we'll look into it.
I think if he trained,
he could do it.
He could do it.
Yeah.
But he's playing a contact sport for, you know, like 7 months of the year.
I think the point about the start is really, he's a big boy. It takes a second to get going.
Yeah, that's why you don't see 6'3", 2". That's why Usain Bolt was a unicorn. Yeah,
yes. We mentioned this earlier. Kyle Busch was the winner of yesterday's Bushy McBush Race 400. The race name was decided by the fans, who were given four choices: the Bush Latte, the Nectar of the Cobs 400, and the Four Farmers 400. Did they make the right choice here?
So fans voted on this, right?
Yes.
Do you think that Bush gave them a true vote? And if, like, you knew it wasn't going to be the latte thing for NASCAR fans, right?
Well, I said fix, so you know how I stand on this.
I think they knew which way it was going to go and knew that we would, in the end, be doing a segment on the Bushy McBush Race 400, and they decided that they would go Bushy McBush Race 400 on this. And good on them, because we're talking about it today, and we never would have talked about it.
Never. It was also Kyle Busch's 36th birthday.
Yeah, yesterday. I saw that too.
If you want to get the tinfoil hat going here.
So you think the fix was in?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. But I got to tell you, if I were to choose, Nectar of the Cobs is just, that's brilliant. We're producers here. We produce.
What's the cobs? Like corn on the cob?
Corn on the cob. The whole thing looks like it's dedicated to the farmers. So yeah, Nectar of the Cobs. Corn on the cob. That's what I would have went with personally. But I'm not a NASCAR fan. I didn't tweet it.
Is there corn and beer?
Oh, this is like
hops and stuff like that. Yeah, what is Nectar of the Cobs? I just thought it was the stuff that gets stuck in my teeth.
This is a tough one. I'm going to have to do some homework tonight.
I feel like I might be stupid right now, but I don't. I don't think there's
tweet
corn.
Tweet us. I don't think there's corn and beer.
Anyone know if there's corn and beer? All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
No one knows in the control room.
No, there's no corn and beer. What are we talking about here?